that there are so many questions in life that are difficult to answer. Questions like, you know, why do they say that an alarm clock is going off when it's actually coming on? That one just really bothers me. Why do they say that you drive on a parkway, but you park on a driveway? You know, it's just not right. You know, why is it that people say, I slept through the night like a baby, when we all know that babies wake up every 2 hours? You know, these are difficult questions of life. I know that you are just traumatized by these questions, just like I am. You know, things like, if you throw a cat out of a moving car, is it called kitty litter? Yeah, I mean, okay, I won't do any more, I promise. I'm just trying to prepare you, though, for some of these very difficult questions that we're going to look at today, because we're starting a new study for several weeks in the book of Habakkuk. If you have your Bible, you can turn there, although you probably won't be able to find it, because it's only 3 chapters long, and it's stuck right in the middle of the Bible, and some of you probably didn't even know it was there and may have never read it, but Habakkuk is a great book. It's really applicable to our world today. And if you want to cheat and look in your pew Bible, it's actually page 639. But the driving question of the book of Habakkuk wanted to know, why doesn't God seem fair? You ever ask that question? Why doesn't God seem fair? Habakkuk is what's known as one of the 12 minor prophets. Anybody know the difference between a minor prophet and a major prophet? Anybody? Nobody knows the difference? Yeah, it's simply the length. The books like Isaiah, Jeremiah, those are really long. They've got 40 or 50 chapters, so they're called major prophets. And then you got a bunch of little short ones that are like 3 chapters long, and they're the minor chapters. That's minor prophets. That's all it really refers to. Habakkuk is one of the 12 minor prophets, which means that his book is short. But it doesn't mean it's not important. God spoke to Habakkuk about the year 600 BC, give or take a little bit. He told him to write this down. And this was a time period when God's people were getting pretty corrupt. It was a time when there was a lot of violence, a lot of wickedness, corruption, evil, people ignoring God. You know, there were suicide bombers and, you know, school shootings, terrorists, that's actually today, isn't it? The point is that his world back then actually looked very much like our world today. There were a lot of bad people doing bad things to good people, but even the good people weren't that good because they really weren't doing much to fix it. So let's read the first 4 verses of Habakkuk. The prophecy that Habakkuk the prophet received. How long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Or cry out to you, violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law is paralyzed, and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous, so that justice is perverted. Now, Habakkuk asks 3 questions right in a row here. There are 3 ways, basically, of saying the same thing. God, why aren't you being fair? First, he asks, how long, Lord, must I call for help, but you what? You do not listen. You ever asked God that? God, why aren't you listening? You know, God, I need help, and you said you'd help. You said you'd answer our prayers, and then I pray for help, and you don't help. How come? How come I pray, and it's like you don't even listen? Some of you have felt that way. Maybe you prayed for something and you were sure that you're praying in accordance with God's will. You're praying for something that's good, but God didn't do it. Maybe you continue praying in faith and you say, well, you know, maybe if I just persevere and keep on praying and don't stop and continue, then maybe God will do it. But still, nothing happens. And eventually you start to ask, well, does God even care? Is he really there? Is he really listening? And God, how come somebody else prays and their prayer is like answered immediately, but then I pray and nothing happens? Now, why is it that I try to raise my kids in a godly way according to your word, and they're a mess, but then that guy over there, you know, he's not even trying to do the right thing with his kids. He never takes them to church, and they're okay. How come, God? You know, how come I try to do what your word says financially, and I'm struggling to make ends meet, but that guy, he's an atheist, and he's doing fine. How come, God? How come I've got these headaches that won't go away? You know, I prayed and it's not doing any good. How come I'm battling depression? How come, you know, somebody I love is having a hard time, and I pray and nothing seems to work? You know, God, it seems like you could do something, but even though I pray, you're not doing anything. God, how come you're not listening? That is Habakkuk's first question. And then he asks the second question. He says, when I cry out to you violence, why don't you save? He's saying, God, I don't know if you've noticed, but the bad guys are winning. You know, what's going on, God? There's violence, they're getting away with it. There's crime and murder and rape and theft, and nobody's doing anything about it. There's no justice. God, can't you see that people are being harmed? Why aren't you doing anything? And I cry out, I pray, I ask you to get involved and stop the violence and the sin, but you don't show up. You don't do anything. God, what's going on? And then in verse 3, he asks God two questions that are basically the same question. Why do you make me look at injustice, and why do you tolerate wrong? In other words, he's saying, you know, I am sick of even looking at this. I'm sick of living with it. You know, I'm sick of all these people doing bad stuff and get away with it. Have you ever felt like that? You know, sometimes I think we're almost sick of reading the newspaper. We don't even want to watch the evening news anymore because it's all crime and mayhem and murder and carnage and bloodshed. And you know, hear these stories about soldiers in Afghanistan posing with body parts and Secret Service in Colombia hiring prostitutes and the Norway mass killers trial. And that's just the news from the last few days. And finally, you get to the point, you know, I don't know if I can handle any more of this. You know, I've had enough. In fact, that's why at the end of every newscast, they have a story about a little kitty being adopted by a girl or something like that. And you know, they say, you know, we'll be right back. Hang on. Don't go away. Don't kill yourself. You know, we're coming back with a story about a kitty. You know, and it's like, out of the whole newscast, you know, there's one positive thing happening. And so, you know, well, maybe the world's not completely bad. Maybe I should give it one more shot tomorrow. This is actually where many Christians are at. Have you ever wondered why the best-selling books and videos are all about the end times and the rapture? Right? Because everybody's asking, when do we get to get out of here? You know, when do we get to go? You know, I'm so sick of it, I want to read books that tell me that, you know, the end time's going to happen any day now, and we're going to be leaving, and that way I can just sit around and eat foods that end with Eatos, and, you know, like, watch TV and veg out and forget about the rest of the world, because, you know, maybe I'll buy guns and bullets and some canned goods so that when the balloon does go up, I can protect me and mine and forget the rest of the world because I'm leaving, and, you know, besides, God's going to burn it all up anyway, and I'm going to dance at the bonfire. It's going to be glorious. That's where Habakkuk is. He's sick of it. He's fed up. He's going, how come I got to look at this? How come I got to live with this? It's like living in a cesspool. It's terrible, and I have to put up with it. I want to leave. Now, some of you might be saying, well, obviously, Habakkuk just didn't have enough faith, or he wouldn't be asking these kinds of questions. Wrong. You know, it's pretty easy to look at somebody who's going through a hard time when you're not and say, oh, they just don't have enough faith. Well, the reason God chose him to speak to his people is because he did have faith. He had deep faith in God. But like so many of us at times in our lives, he saw things around him in life that didn't seem to quite match up with his faith. And so he's got some serious questions. How does God answer his questions? Well, let me tell you, you're not going to like the answer that God gives. Habakkuk did not like the answer God gave. You won't either. God's basic answer is, yes, Habakkuk, I do see all the wickedness, and so for your own good, I'm going to punish you. Oh, thanks, God. You ever ask God, you know, God, could you just please show me what you're doing? You know, you might want to think about that because you might not like the answer. Habakkuk did not like the answer that he got. God says this in verse 5. He says, look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed, for I am going to do something in your days that you would not believe, even if you were told. I am raising up the Babylonians. Now, hold on a second. The Babylonians, are those the good guys or the bad guys? Those are the bad guys. Those are the enemy of Israel, or actually Israel at this point in their history is called Judah. But same thing, those are the enemies. And they had already conquered most of the known world at this time. And now Judah is next on their list. And they're coming after him. And God says, I'm going to let them. I'm going to let them punish you. In verse 7 it says, they are a feared and dreaded people. They are a law unto themselves and promote their own honor. So God says, they are bad. They are awful. And so I'm going to let them conquer you. And that's God's way of handling this situation, to apply justice. Now, we don't like that plan, do we? He says, I'm going to punish the whole nation for their sin. I'm going to use an enemy nation to do it. We do not like that answer. Our response to God would be, no. I don't want justice. I just want you to fix it. You know, I just want you to you know, stop all the evil and wrongdoing and fix. I want things to be better, but I don't want anybody to have to pay for their wrongdoing. I don't want anybody to have to, you know, be punished. I mean, that's a little harsh, God, to hold them accountable for their sin, and we don't want that. Can't you just, like, say a magic word and make it better, or you know, like, wave your magic fairy wand and fix things without having anybody actually held accountable for their sin or having to pay for it, you know, without punishing anyone? Couldn't you be like sort of a talk show host and just encourage people to be a better version of themselves, and, you know, and so it'll all be better, and you're not actually going to hold people accountable and let them reap the consequences of their sin, are you? We don't like that, do we? And I'll tell you why we don't like it. Because we all know that we are guilty as well. I already talked about the fact that Habakkuk's world was actually very much like the world that we live in today. You know, when you watch the evening news, do you ever see any evidence of corruption? Maybe a little evil, murders, injustice, you know. You ever see anything like that? Yeah, like every day on the news. The truth is, we're just as guilty as Judah was 2,500 years ago. The Bible says all have sinned, all have fallen short. That includes us. And so in the back of our mind, we're saying, well, you know, God, you can't do that to them because they're an awful lot like me. And I'm one of the good guys. But God says, you know what, actually there's only one good guy. His name is Jesus. The rest of you are all various degrees of problems. And if I never hold you accountable, if I never bring discipline, then you won't ever grow. We don't like that answer, though. Nobody likes that. Now, some of you might be thinking, well, is God actually going to do evil here? Is he actually inciting the Babylonians to do evil? No. The fact is, the Babylonians already want to invade. That's just their nature. They've already done it to most of the world, and God has been holding them back up to this point. He has been holding and back and protecting his people for a long, long time. He's been waiting and waiting and waiting for them to turn around and change their ways. He's sent prophet after prophet after prophet to warn them and tell them, hey, you got to change. You got to follow God again. You know, time is running out. And the people just ignored prophet after prophet. And now it's too late. God is going to lift his protection, and the Babylonians are coming. Now, I already know that this CD is not going to sell a whole lot of copies after the service today, because nobody likes to hear about the fact that, oh yeah, well, you might be judged. You know, that's not going to be a popular one. In fact, this is not what you would call a sitcom sermon. Anybody know what a sitcom sermon is? Did you ever watch sitcoms, you know, 10, 20 years ago when they actually had those instead of reality shows? You know, who watched sitcoms? You know, Happy Days, Brady Bunch. What was common about all those? Well, you knew going in that, you know, there's going to be a little humor. There's going to be a little tension in the plot to make it interesting. But at the end of 30 minutes, it's all going to be tied neatly together. The problems are going to be solved. Everybody's going to be happy, right? You know, because that's how it worked. A lot of people like sitcom sermons. Oh, there's a little humor. There's a little tension maybe, you know, to make it interesting. But, you know, at the end of the sermon, it's all going to be neatly tied together, all solutions in place, and so that we can go on happily with our lives and everything's okie-dokie. Unfortunately, Habakkuk doesn't lend itself to sitcom sermons. Because in Habakkuk, you get all the tension, you get all the drama, but you also get a lot of unanswered questions. And the ending isn't necessarily happy. It's a lot more like real life, isn't it? Habakkuk says, as far as I can see, nothing is turning out fair. Now, I want to spend a few minutes trying to explain what Habakkuk is going through. And to do this, there's a guy named Seth Godin who wrote a bestseller called The Dip. He uses this chart. This is the chart up here that he uses. I'm going to use his chart, but then I'm going to sort of modify it and use it a little bit differently. But what he says basically is that any path in life, when you first go down that path, there's a lot of reward, immediate rewards. Otherwise, we wouldn't go down the path generally. After a while, though, the reward versus effort is reduced. This is called the dip. But if you push through it, when appropriate, it will eventually be highly rewarded. Okay, that's his motto. Let's apply it to Christianity. Let's go to the next slide here. Okay, say there's a person who hasn't yet decided to follow Christ. They're at the beginning here, and maybe that's even you. Maybe you're here this morning, you've been watching all these baptisms, you say, well, you know, I'm still not sure, but then one day the Holy Spirit starts working in your life, God starts doing something in your life, and it starts to make more sense, and the belief grows, and you know, at some point you say, you know what, I realize I do need to follow Christ. You know, I realize I do believe that God is there and that Jesus is the Son of God, and I need to commit my life to Him. And so there comes a point at which you make that plunge, and then let's go to you go from this point to being a new follower of Christ. And what happens almost always, and I see this time after time after time, what happens is when people make that decision to follow Christ, things in their life just start getting blessed. And, you know, the things are going so good. You know, you start praying and God answers your prayers. And you go, whoa, you know, God just answered my prayer. That was so cool. And you know, you go to church and the sermon seems like it's just for you. And you're going, whoa, God, you were speaking right to me. You know, it's amazing, you know. And then you go out in your car and your favorite song's on. Woohoo, God's doing this, you know. And you go to the mall and there's a parking place right there. Oh, God got me a parking place and it's so great. And everything's going wonderful. And you're up at the top of that little dip right there. Eventually, what will happen is that you'll go to church one day and the sermon won't speak directly to you, and you'll go, whoa, that's kind of weird. And you'll go out to your car and your favorite song isn't on, and wow, that's even weirder. And then you pray for something and it gets worse. And you know, somebody that you love is going through a really hard time, and you pray about it, and they're still in a hard time, and you're going, God, what is going on here? Something's changed. Something's going on. I don't understand it. And you have just arrived at what Henry Blackaby calls a crisis of belief. If we go to the next slide here, all these little things have led you to a crisis of belief. And at the crisis of belief, you're saying things like, God, you know, I thought you were always going to be good. I thought you were always going to come through. I thought we had like this understanding. And you know, now that I'm a follower of yours, you know, I was always going to be blessed. You know, I thought it was going to be like this. What is going on? I'm not even sure what I believe right now because it doesn't seem to be working anymore. And typically when this happens, when you're trying to follow God, but life is getting hard, people go one of three directions. The first possible direction will be, if we go to the next slide, is you'll try to go back up to where you were. Now, unfortunately, you can't change your circumstances, make everything start working out well again, right? So what this really involves is sort of like pretending, you know? And you know, maybe if I just pretend like things are still good, or maybe if I have a positive mental attitude and you know, just really believe hard, you know, that things are going to go back, you know, maybe it'll work, and you know, I pretend like it's all better than it really is, but, you know, that doesn't work very well, and it certainly doesn't work for very long. The second option, if we go to the next slide, is you can get mad and go right back where you were. You say, God, if that's the way you're going to be, if you're not going to do the things that I thought you were going to do, you know, if you're not going to come through with your part of the bargain that I thought I had with you, then forget it. I'm not in this. I'm out of here. You get mad at God and go back to the beginning. Or the third option is that you can go the more difficult road, which is to say, God, regardless of how difficult it is right now, regardless of what comes along with my life, even when it's really hard, I'm going to follow you anyway. And when you choose that, God will take you on a journey. Now, I have to tell you, that journey doesn't necessarily get better. In fact, that journey may continue downward. Let's not go to the next slide yet. That journey may not continue, you know, go up at this point. It may get worse. You may have additional faith crises. You may have additional hard times. And you're still saying, God, I don't understand this. I don't know what's going on. Why aren't you doing what I ask you to do? Why aren't you asking my prayers? But if you hang on, if you refuse to give up, if you continue to trust, even when things are hard, then eventually God will take you on this journey to a place over time where your intimacy and trust and security grows to a place that you never, ever thought possible. But it'll never happen unless you're willing to go through that season of doubt. And let's go to the next slide now. This season of doubt, this is so critical in all of our growth. If you don't go through that season, then you can't get to that place of intimacy and security and trust in God. In fact, everybody I know that has a deep, deep relationship with God, everybody I know that has an intimate relationship with God, they have all been through this season of doubt. They've all been through the trials and just had to keep on going, hanging on, even when things were really hard and difficult. If you don't go through that time, you can't get to the reward that lies beyond. The New Testament says it this way in James chapter 1. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you what? When you encounter various trials. Why? Knowing that the testing of your faith in this season of doubt will have its perfect result, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. That's what James is talking about. You see, there's a purpose behind this. God may lovingly allow you to go through a very difficult season of doubts and questioning, fear and insecurities, unanswered questions, because by doing so, he will take you to a place that you could never, ever get to otherwise. And he will build in you a strength that he could never build in you otherwise. We were going to watch a video. I think we're going to skip that because we're running real long today because of the baptism. So I'm just going to continue on. I know that right now some of you here are in a season of doubt. And you're going, God, what is going on? What are you doing? I don't understand it. You know where you are? You're at chapter 1 in the book of Habakkuk. Just like Habakkuk, you don't know what to believe right now. You don't know what God is doing. You don't have any idea why he isn't doing what you thought he should be doing. And too many people walk away from God when they're in chapter 1. They're in this season of doubt. They don't know what's going on, and so they don't hang on. You see, chapter 1 is all about wondering, God, where are you? What are you doing? And that can be a critical part of your faith journey. That's where Habakkuk was. God, what are you doing? I don't understand. So here's the big question. What do you do when you're at chapter 1 of Habakkuk? When you have all these questions and doubts and you don't understand, can you still be a deeply committed believer and still have all these deep questions? Well, I put the answer to this on your outline because it's so important. A deeply committed believer can express simultaneous questions and faith. A deeply committed believer can, at the same time, believe God and have faith, but also have a lot of questions. That is completely okay. It's part of our journey with him. In fact, I'll give you an example from the Bible. Mark 9:24. You can read the story if you want later. It's about a father who had a son possessed by an evil spirit. The father comes to Jesus and says, Jesus, can you do anything for him? Jesus says, basically, hey, I'm God. I can do anything I want. The real question is, do you believe? And the father says, yes, Lord, I believe, sort of. Literally, he says, I do believe. Help my unbelief. You see, what he's really saying is, you know, let's go to the next slide. He's saying, you know, God, I was at this point where I really did believe, and then, you know, I had so many problems with my son, and we prayed, and we fasted, we prayed some more, and nothing happened, and he just got worse and worse, and we tried to do everything according to your word, we were trying to follow you, and it just didn't work, nothing happened, and now my faith just isn't where it used to be. And so, you know, I'm not back up here. I'm down here. Please help my unbelief. And I think God brought him to that point for a very good purpose, the same purpose that he uses in our lives. He was in a season of doubt. He had a lot of unbelief. But God let him get there so that God could say to him, you know what? I'm going to do something in your life that you would never believe. I'm going to do something that's so amazing, you will never come to that same point of doubt again. And I know your situation with your son was hard. I know it was difficult. You wanted to give up and you didn't understand it. I know that. But it was necessary, or else you would have never gotten to that point of deeper faith that you will come to when you see this healing. Some of you may be in chapter 1 right now. You know, I wish I could be really encouraging this morning, but there's some bad news. Chapter 2 isn't much better. You know, chapter 1 is all about wondering and God, why are you not doing this? Chapter 2 is all about waiting. We'll get to that next week. It's waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. God, when are you going to do something? But if you hang on, chapter 3 is great. Chapter 3 is all about worship. If you refuse to give up, if you stick with God, refuse to let go, you will come to the point that no matter what you see around you, no matter what your circumstances look like, you will get to the point where you can worship. You can get to the point where that reward is so visible and evident in your life. Not because of what you see. Not because all the circumstances are suddenly working out great all the time. No, it's because you have learned that you can always trust him. And so as we close, what do you do if you're in chapter 1? You hang on to God with all your might. You don't let go. No matter what is going on around you, you keep hanging on. No matter when, you don't know why God is doing something or not doing something, why he's not answering your prayer. You don't know anything, but you hang on anyway. I don't like what you're taking me through, God. I hate these circumstances, but I'm going to hang on to you anyway. Because let me tell you, even if things seem to get worse, if you will hang on to him, he will never let go of you. Let's stand for prayer. I'd like the worship band to come up for a closing song. Let's bow together. Heavenly Father, today I want to specifically pray for those who are in chapter 1 of Habakkuk. They have answers or questions that they don't know the answer to. They've got all kinds of doubts and maybe even unbelief, and they just don't know what's going on. And yet, I pray that they would hold on to you, God, and that you would give them the faith to continue to hold on. God, help us to trust you no matter what we see, to trust you, God, for who you are. And God, I pray for those who are in chapter 1 that sometime soon you'd turn the page and bring an end to their season of difficulty and doubt and lead them to the rewards that lie beyond. And that they'd be on the other side with a deeper and a richer and a more intimate faith in you that couldn't have come any other way. Or maybe this morning you're not sure of your relationship with God. You're not sure that you're part of God's family for all of eternity. It's time to step across the line. You can do that right now with a simple prayer. Just say something like this in your heart. God will hear you. Jesus, I do believe that you're the Son of God. And I surrender my life to you right now, as much as I understand or know how. Please forgive my sins. I give my life to you. I ask you to fill me with your Spirit so that I have the power to follow you from this point on. Amen.